It is no secret that many of our brave men and women who protect us every day are suffering from PTSD, depression, anxiety, general life stressors, you name it. My next guest, Dr. Catherine Coleman, has experience in treatment of all of those. She has worked since 2014, primarily providing services to first responders and their families, truly understanding the unique stressors inherent in these occupations. She has presented nationally on wellness issues related to law enforcement as well as school safety. She served as a subject matter expert on traumatic stress on the Colorado Governor's Emergency Epidemic Response Committee prior to moving to Arizona. Dr. Coleman has responded and provided debriefing services to critical incidents, including officer-involved shootings, suicides, line-of-duty deaths, and mass shootings. This is a great episode. You're going to get a lot of takeaways. If you're suffering or if you know people who are suffering, you do not want to miss this episode. Next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in. Big shout out to all the brave men and women out there working in the criminal justice field, a very, very difficult environment, you know, but you're doing a fantastic job. Keep up the fantastic work. I want to talk about Detecticam and how they can help protect your brave men and women who protect us every day. I remember years ago, we used to have these kits called NIC kits, and whenever we came into contact with an illicit drug, we used to take a little bit of the substance, put it in this kit, follow the steps, look for a certain color, and that would indicate maybe cocaine, meth, whatever you were trying to figure out it was. No more. Detecticam has technology that replaces all that, that fits in the palm of your hand, detecting illicit drugs and explosives. This is an amazing company, folks, and they can do so much to keep your troops safe. Head over to the website, cjevolution.com. Click on the link to Detecticam. See how they can help you protect your troops. If you are struggling to keep up with your department's extra duty program, I want to tell you about Extra Duty Solutions. This great company helps law enforcement agencies add efficiency and effectiveness to their extra duty programs while allowing them to focus on what matters, and that's the safety of their citizens. They work with law enforcement agencies to administer their extra duty programs. They can help with client interactions, scheduling, invoicing, collections, officer payments, feedback, problem resolution, cash flow management. They do it all. And their services are provided at no cost to the department and a minimal cost to the clients. How could you go wrong? And programs can be customized to meet the goals and unique needs of any agency. If you head over to extradutysolutions.com, that's extradutysolutions.com, let them help you with your extra duty programs and tell them Patrick from the CJ Evolution Podcast sent you. I want to tell you about my great friends at Onnit. What is Onnit? Onnit is total human optimization. They're athletes, biohackers, professionals, police officers, retirees, tradespeople. We're all human trying to get a little better at what we love every day. The human body is our instrument that we play to achieve greatness, and optimizing it for peak performance requires the proper nutrition, fitness, and supplementation. Onnit provides these foundations to support your human journey. They have great supplements, apparel, everything you need to get your health back on track. If you head over to the website, see the link to Onnit, check them out. You will not be disappointed. On to the show with Dr. Catherine Coleman. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm very excited to have my next guest on the show. She's doing so much for our brave men and women who protect us every day. Katie Coleman is on the show. Katie, you there?
I am here.
Well, thank you for being here. I know you're pretty busy. You're down in Scottsdale, Arizona. How's the weather down there?
It is sunny and 90. And for a girl from Colorado, I think it's hot. Everyone else is great right now. They're talking about how nice the weather is, and I am burning up.
Yeah, I think I mentioned off the air, but I was down there in like May or, the beginning of May, and it was like 100 and something degrees. So I can't imagine. You haven't been there for a full summer yet, right?
No, not even a little bit of summer.
That'll be fun.
It'll be a test.
So in the intro, I gave a little bit about your background, Katie. Can you talk a little bit more about your background and how you got started on your journey with all the help you do for our brave men and women?
Absolutely. So I really started getting interested a long time ago in high school. I loved criminal justice TV shows. I was obsessed with Law and Order. We watched it as a family every week. And I went to college and I decided to major in psychology. It was really interesting to me. And then I started to take some criminal justice classes and I loved it. I loved the work of law enforcement. And there was a hot second where I thought maybe I would go into law enforcement. I realized that I am as feminine as they come. A uniform would not look good on me. And I'm way too kind. I would make a horrible cop. But I respected all of the work that they did. So I went on, studied forensic psychology, got my master's, doctorate, all that stuff. And I really thought for a long time that I would end up being more of a forensic psychologist doing court ordered evaluations. And I ended up really falling into police psychology, working with Dr. John Nicoletti at Nicoletti Flater in Colorado. And I fell in love with it. I realized that I would rather work with the good guys than the bad guys. It was really nice to have people that truly wanted to work on themselves and to have clients that I really respected. So that's really where it all began. And I love the work. I fully support law enforcement. It's a job that I couldn't do, but I think I've learned to really understand. I found that I can be myself with law enforcement officers as clients. I can be honest and, give some tough love at times. And, you know, we talked a little bit beforehand, just the, no BS, no bullshit with them, mm-hmm. just kind of be direct and be assertive. So that's really where it began. And now, fortunately, I've been able to kind of move on, still do a lot of work with Dr. Nicoletti, but have my own place here in Arizona where I get to support the women and men of law enforcement in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And then also kind of continue consulting and doing some of the workplace and school violence stuff as well. So it's been a great ride.
Well, I want to talk about, the workplace and school violence and how you're helping mitigate that in a few minutes. But you know, Katie, you watch the news, I'm assuming. You have nothing but respect for law enforcement, as do I and all of our listeners. What do you think? I mean, it just seems like it's getting nuttier out there with all this anti-police bias out there. I mean, what do you think some of the problems, as somebody outside but looking in, you have a glimpse into it, by what you're doing with your work. What do you think some of the problems that law enforcement are going to be dealing with in the future?
Well, I mean, gosh, that is a loaded question.
It is, but, and I know it's kind of a broad question, but what do you think?
There are so many factors, truthfully. I think, first of all, I think that there is a silent majority that's very supportive of law enforcement.
I agree.
I believe it was might have been up in North Dakota, maybe it's Minnesota, but there, one of the universities up there did a study. It was about 2 years ago, and it was right after kind of all the Black Lives Matter stuff was coming out about support for law enforcement. And what they found was that the majority of Americans really are supportive of their law enforcement. They're just not so vocal about it as the people who are anti, which is really good. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that if you're a cop in today's day and age, what you see is the folks who are anti. You know, the people who are supportive aren't coming out in droves and protesting in front of the Capitol. Mm-hmm. So you see that on a day-to-day basis, and that's got to affect people in a huge way. So I think one is the perception, right, that people are against them. Number two, sadly, I think it's generational, and I feel like I can say this because I'm a millennial. Technically, I'm an old millennial, but I can bash millennials because I am one. I think we've got a generation that was raised on you can do whatever you want. We've got kids that are being raised with parents not telling them no, and they grow up and then they get into the real world, and unfortunately, in the real world, you get fired, you get told that you're wrong, and you get told no. And they're not used to that. And law enforcement tells people no, and you can't do that a lot of the time. So I think that they're feeling a brunt of it, because of some of the generational stuff.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's a good segue to my next question for you, Katie, mm-hmm. is that you, again, talk to so many first responders with what you're doing. and in the government, with all kinds of people you talk to. What are some of the reoccurring issues or problems that you hear about with people that you're counseling and working with? Mm-hmm. Because you hit it right on the head. It's such a difficult environment. I was in it for 23 years. I can't imagine getting into it now. I mean, it's always been a difficult job, Katie. You know that. I mean, what are some of the reoccurring things that people are dealing with?
You know, if you think about it, law enforcement and really first responders in general, it's a subset of the general population. And so the issues, a lot of them are the same that you would see in anybody else. So you've got people, you know, who are annoyed at their shitty teenage kids for talking back to them. You've got people who are in bad relationships or bad marriages. You've got people who, you know, I know the traffic in Denver, it's horrible, you know, who get a little bit of road rage and just want to flip everybody off. It's the same for everyone. I think that really what sets our first responders apart, though, is that it's a high stress occupation.
Sounds
and
good, yeah.
Certainly other occupations are stressful, but the majority of jobs, you don't have people yelling in your face. You don't have people telling you how much they hate you. You don't have people threatening your life on a day-to-day basis, spitting on you, you know, wanting to fight you, telling you that you ruined their lives. Yeah. Most people don't have to deal with that. So when you take your normal everyday stressors that everybody has to deal with, and then you compound that with everything from the job, it's going to mess with people. And so I think that that's what I see. I think I see a lot of regular day-to-day stressors just amplified by work.
Mm-hmm. And what can, like, if there's a, I'm sure there's listeners out there listening right now that are going through, you know, they're just trying to go through and deal with so many issues they have going on. I mean, what can first responders do, as well as other people who might be listening, to stay mentally healthy? I'm sure there's a plethora of things, but what are some things that they can do right now?
Well, I think one is to put their own self-care mm-hmm. first. When you're in an occupation like this, you're really trained to think about everybody else and you're taking care of everybody else all the time. And I think just giving yourself the permission to step back and have some time for yourself, mm-hmm. you know, tell your spouse that you need an hour on the way home so that you can stop at the gym just to, you know, get some steam off.
Yeah.
So I think one is just giving yourself that permission, but there's so many things that people can do. I'm a huge proponent of physical fitness. There's a lot of research that says, you know, cortisol is the stress chemical that builds up when people are stressed. And one of the best ways to reduce those levels is through cardiovascular exercise. So if people aren't working out, I tell them that they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's huge.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, first and foremost, I tell first responders and people I teach all the time to, you got to take care of yourself. And I like using the analogy, it's not mine, I stole it from somebody else, but imagine, you know, you're on a plane and, you know, a flight attendant is up there, him or her, and they're giving them the safety presentation and they say, all right, when the mask drops, put it on yourself first. And I kind of mm-hmm. like using that, because if you don't take care of yourself first, how are you going to take care of everybody else? I mean, I worked graveyards for years, and you probably heard this before, Katie. And I remember thinking it was great that I could get by with 3 or 4 hours of sleep. In reality, that was not good for me. I wasn't taking care of myself the way I should have. But you have to take care of yourself first. So when I talk to first responders and, you know, maybe in an academy session, I said, you know, first and foremost, I know we're not trained this way, but you got to take care of yourself first. And I think it's working a little bit with this generation in law enforcement. Maybe you have a different opinion, but a lot we're talking about it a lot more now mm-hmm. than we ever did when I first got in.
Well, we have to reduce the stigma. I mean, the reality is that the stigma is still there. I think it's going to be around for a long time. But whatever we can do to start to get rid of it, right? When we talk about mental health issues in law enforcement more, you know, people, it gets normalized.
Yeah.
You know, when I tell departments that, you know, feel free to talk about it. You can't get fired for saying that you're anxious.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and people believe that they can, but the truth of the matter is that there's laws that protect you from that. And, you know, if we have chiefs and command level staff supporting peer support teams and supporting law enforcement specific employee assistance programs, people will start to use them. You know, if we have sergeants that are telling the guys that they supervise, hey, you know, I go to counseling every once in a while just to get a couple of things off my chest. You know, somebody that people respect saying that they go and do this, that's going to start to reduce the stigma.
Yeah, and I agree 100%. And I think the big problem, because I was one of those command staff guys at one point, I think a problem with a lot of them is they think by saying that, it's a sign of weakness. Like, I can't let my troops know that I talk to somebody because then they'll think, oh my God, he's got problems, you know. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I think with a lot of leaders, they're hesitant with that. I know I was at a certain point in my career, not towards the latter part, but definitely in the middle part of it, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to tell them that because they might think I'm weak.
Right. And it's a problem.
Yeah, it's a problem. Now, what about, you know, one thing that really changed my life, Katie, was, you know, mindfulness, meditation over the last handful of years. I mean, what's your thought about that?
I think my experience is that it's been really difficult to convince cops that meditation is a good thing.
Yeah.
The assumption is that people are sitting on a floor with their legs crossed, with their, you know, thingy hands folded. And the reality, and that's not the way that it is. And so sometimes I don't always call it mindfulness.
Yeah.
I just call it, you know, being present or shutting your mind off for a moment, you know, not calling it meditation. But it's incredibly helpful because what I think mindfulness allows people to do is to be present in that moment, because a lot of the times we are living in the past or worrying about the future. And that creates a lot of problems. And so whatever we can do to focus on the present, and it doesn't have to be difficult. You know, one of the things that I tell people to do, it's not meditation, but it's a way to get them in the moment and present and to shut off their brain for just a couple of seconds, is to do, we call it a body scan, and it's 20 seconds. And you can do it while you're driving. You don't have to close your eyes, and you just kind of imagine a plane, like an MRI, going down your body and releasing tension. And that's it. That's all it is. And people can do that. And then they say, oh my gosh, I feel so much better after that 20 seconds.
Yeah. That's a great,
it's amazing.
It doesn't, cause we're all rushed. We all have things to do. And, you know, people probably say, you probably hear it, Katie, where, well, I don't have time. Well, it's 20 seconds.
Right. What I always tell them, I'm like, you got to piss at some point. Do it while you're in the bathroom.
Well, I tell people, and a lot of cops that I talk to, Katie, I talk to them openly about mindfulness. And from the people I talk to a lot of people. I would say 90% of them have some sort of meditation practice, which is amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, because they ask me about mine, I say every day before my feet even hit the floor, I don't even answer my phone for like 45 minutes in the morning, because I'm going through this routine in my mind. First of all, I'm going through a gratefulness routine. And then when my feet hit the floor, I'm meditating for at least 15 minutes. That really, for me, sets the course of my day. Mm-hmm. And it has done tremendous things for me. So I think for those law enforcement first responders out that are listening, do it. I mean, there's apps, guided apps. There's so much information out there.
The apps are amazing. And I'm someone, I get it. It's hard to sit for 15 minutes and to shut your brain off. And so starting small with 30 seconds or a minute,
exactly,
and building to longer is the way to go.
Now let's pivot a little bit. Let's talk about your great work. You do a lot. You go talk to a ton of people about trying to eliminate, mitigate workplace and school violence. Can you talk about that?
Oh, absolutely. That's my second passion. I don't know what I'm passionate about more, about supporting first responders or, you know, reduction of violence. And I think they really go hand in hand,
sure,
right? It's all about public safety, mm-hmm, right? If we can keep our law enforcement and first responders mentally well, then they're going to do their jobs a lot better. And, you know, with workplace and school safety, what can we do to educate people in these environments about signs that they can look for? And then what can they do about it?
So what are some of the signs? I mean, that I know a lot of people listening, but for those people out there that don't know, what are some of the signs that people can kind of cue into and say something's wrong?
Well, there's a couple of different things. In avenger type of violence, which is really the kind of violence that we're talking about, that's that school and workplace violence, mm-hmm, you know, the mass shootings, there's a really clear pathway from when these people start thinking about it to when they actually commit their offense. And we see it time and time again in nearly every mass shooting. There's the same pathway, and people don't just snap. It always starts somewhere. And usually there's almost always a perceived injustice or some type of grievance. And it can be, you know, because they were rejected or they got fired or they didn't get the promotion. I've even heard things that weren't accurate. So people were purposely trying to annoy me, or people were discriminating against me. You know, they're not real, but that's what they start to see. And that turns into a grudge. And then they start to blame everybody else for their problems. There's no ownership. And then they want to resolve that grievance. And they start obsessing about how they're going to do it. And sometimes it's legal action and sometimes it's violence. Yes. So that's the pathway. And then with behaviors, you know, we're looking at things like, are they pushing boundaries? Are they, you know, terrorists before they commit a terror attack will do a dry run, right? They test to see what response is going to look like. And people who commit these types of violence do the same thing, just on a different level. Mm-hmm. You know, early on, they might be sneaking into areas of the school that they're not supposed to be in. I gave an example the other day when I was doing a training up in Colorado for a school district on, you know, a kid using the teacher's restroom, right? It's not violent, but it's a way to see what they can get away with. Mm-hmm. And then there's threat making, and the majority of threats aren't direct. People don't usually say, I'm going to come kill you. They say, you shouldn't come to school tomorrow, or you're really going to get it, or you don't want to see me when I'm angry. Mm-hmm. You know, and we see a really quick change in behavior, you know, a new interest in firearms, acquiring weapons. I mean, there's a whole slew of behaviors, and the Secret Service and FBI have done a lot of research really since the 70s on what to look for. And now people are finally starting to listen and apply it.
You know, the thing that's amazing to me, Katie, is in a lot of these incidents, clearly not all of them, but when something happens, then it always amazes me. People are like, you know, this person was, you know, he's such a quiet kid. He never had any problems or anything like that. And I got to call bullshit on that a lot of times. You mean to tell me that you didn't notice anything, any types of precursors? And you tell me, maybe I'm wrong, but for me, it seems hard to believe. And again, not in every incident, but some of the high profile stuff I've seen throughout the years, people are like, oh no, he was just a quiet guy. Never showed any signs of this. And I'm like, come on. Or are you just afraid to be that person that says something because you don't want to be that person? You know what I mean?
Right. We're so scared to, you know, step on toes or throw somebody under the bus that when there is something concerning, people don't want to report it. Sure. But there's almost 99.9% of the time, there's been some sort of clue. There's been a broadcast beforehand. You know, somebody knew. And you know, a great example is the Virginia Tech shooter, for example, right? People, oh, he's kind of quiet. He's withdrawn. But it came out in a writing assignment, you know, this fantasy about killing his dad and how he would do it. So it's not always verbal. It comes out, though, in other ways.
I mean, I just keep thinking of, you know, the terrible tragedy at Columbine where I don't think their parents, you know, Klebold and whoever, they're, you know, Harris. I mean, I don't think their parents went downstairs and they had an arsenal down there. And then the parents acted like, oh, we never knew. Well, are you going to go downstairs and check and every once in a while see what your kid's doing?
Time and time again, parents are like, that's their private space. We don't want to go in there.
Oh, that's BS. I'm walking in my kid's room all the time. Hey, what's going on? What's next for you? I mean, you got a lot. You got a big business. You recently relocated down to Scottsdale and your business has taken off. Your consulting, I want to talk about that. What's next for you? I mean, I think a book is in your future there, Katie. We were talking a little bit of this off the air, but you got a lot of experience. You got a lot of knowledge. And we both went to DU, by the way. I forgot to mention that.
Oh, nice.
But what's next? I mean, I think you got so much more to offer. I mean, you're doing great work now, but maybe a book or I was putting a podcast in here, Katie. There you go.
I don't know that I can do 300 plus episodes. I think I'd run out of topics.
Oh, there's plenty. Trust me, there's plenty of topics out there. Great guests like you come on my show all the time. We love it.
Yeah, you know, I am somebody, I don't I don't love when things are pre-planned. I like to say yes to opportunities as they present themselves. And so that's some of my plan. I really want to continue to support first responders. I would love to, do some more trainings. I like the idea of writing a book. Mm-hmm. The procrastinator in me thinks that might take about 10 years. And one of the things that I've noticed as I've moved to Arizona is that there's some really great people here. Mm-hmm. And but the threat assessment piece, the focus on workplace and school safety has really fallen on the hands of law enforcement. And there's not a lot of psychologists who are involved in this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I really want to use my expertise in that field to help them kind of create some programming, train folks, help them look over cases so that we can bring, you know, really what Colorado has begun to figure out here in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. I had never thought, after, 23 years in law enforcement, I never thought coming into this great profession that first responders out there would be going almost on a daily basis, Katie. I mean, you've seen it. And responding to people in crisis. I mean, I never thought it would get to that. I never thought we would be giving people Narcan either, and trying to reverse overdoses. But it really is amazing to see how far we've come and where we're going to go in the future with this. Because you hit it right on the head. I mean, first responders are the forefront of this, and it seems like it's not slowing down. It's getting more and more busy.
Right. I mean, the number of hats that our law enforcement have to wear, being, not only enforcers of the law, but counselors, social workers, teachers, mm-hmm. There's just so many roles to play, and to switch hats from very different personalities that's exhausting.
Now, if people listening, Katie, want to employ your services, they want to reach out to you, how can they find you?
So I am online. My website is www.drkuhlman.com, which is DrKuhlman. And I've got my email on there, my phone number. I've got online scheduling for appointments. And I'm happy to chat with anybody too, if they wonder how I might be able to help them, but it's not, exactly explicit on there.
Katie Coleman, Dr. Coleman. I told you I wouldn't call you a doctor, but at the end, I'm going to call you a doctor. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You're doing so much great work with our brave men and women. Love to have you back on, Katie.
Anytime.
It was such a great chat. You're doing so many great things. If, any final thoughts, any final piece of advice, that you want to give the first responder out there who might be struggling?
I would like to thank all of our first responders for the work that they do. You and I talked a little bit before the show started about how it's such a special job, and it takes a really special person to do that job. And so I want to say thanks first and foremost. And then my parting piece of advice is to take care of yourself. Put yourself first. It's okay to not be okay. In fact, it's normal. Most of us go through something. And take care of yourself.
Katie, thank you so much. I hope you have a fantastic day. I look forward to talking with you in the future.
Thank you so much, Patrick. You have a great day as well.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.